To this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 153. I'm Kelvin Larrabee, and first off with me is Dr. Jonathan Bass. Accelerated strength.com and jonathanbass.blogspot.com, which is never updated, but we might as well mention it anyways.
Might as well. I got a few things brewing, but I think I say that every week. I really do. I have something on leg extensions that I'm dying to write about, but just don't have the time.
Maybe you should do like an audio blog. Just talk it, then put up the file.
I can. You should. You like to talk on the phone.
That's true. I do.
Dude, I'll help you out with that. I'll put the files together, and I'll even host them for you if you want.
I think I get too off topics though. I'm like, I just go and
do you know who you're talking to right now?
I guess that's
although
true.
Lee's very straight to the point because Lee has no one to talk to on her podcast.
Mm.
She has no one to
that
take her off.
So track. Psychotic and lonely.
No, I was gonna, you have no one to be like, hey, Lee, you know, like in Back to the Future when Marty walks into the Cafe 80s? And it's weird because they say it's like a baby's toy. And that was Elijah Wood who said that. No. See, that doesn't happen there. But also, by the way, we have Lee Peel.
Elijah Wood.
Yeah. I just dropped it. Back to the Future bomb.
Okay. I got excited. Did you ask me a question? Because my mind's reeling off of that right now.
I just said Sleep Peel from LeePeel.com.
Yeah.
What up, Lee? Right.
Say what up?
From whatuplee.com.
I'll buy it.
Actually, I might have to get that right now and put up a picture.
Oh, you would. I gotta
are you kidding, Lee?
Site. I got to update your site.
Hold on. I'm jumping into my Yahoo account real quick to... buy this domain.
That's horrible.
John, what's new?
I don't know. Lots of good stuff, I guess. I don't know. I just
working
finished
like a maniac.
Pretty much. I just passed the 1/3 of my residency done point.
Awesome.
That was exciting. That was really
so. How long is that going to take you?
13 and
is
a half
it the
months.
Pin? Or is it, okay, so it is like kind of a definitive. It's definitely good.
It's generally it's kind of like 12 months, and then the last month and a half is used to mentor the incoming residents. So, so that's kind of how it generally works.
Excellent.
Yep.
All right, we got a couple things we're going to talk about before we get into the mailbag. First thing is that Eric Cressy will be on the show. Very soon to talk about Assess and Correct, the DVD that he put together with Mike Robertson and Bill Hartman.
Looking good.
Yeah, no, it's, man, I don't have my credit card on me. all right.
Let it
do
go.
It during the break.
Let it go.
Do it during the break.
But the DVD is done. It's, I guess they're going to start pressing it, and it should be available. I guess I can say this. It's going to be available on Monday.
Sweet.
And we're going to have... What I would like to do is I'd like to have Eric on, then Bill on, then Mike
then
on.
Mike.
Just do 3 weeks of just really smart people. It's fun. And Eric can talk about his deadlifting because he deadlifted for... Oh, and unfortunately, Tony's not here. He has a... he has the sniffles... So
H1N1.
Yeah, he's got H1N1, and they're out of children's Tylenol. So he's having to recuperate in his revitalization chamber. But the where was I going with that? Tony hit a new PR on his deadlift. He got 560, I think, or 550.
Oh, so he hit it. Huh. He mentioned that last week. Congratulations to him.
Yeah, Tony definitely did it, and. Eric ripped his hand open.
Oh.
No. Not as much fun. Also, kind of on the topic of talking about new and awesome stuff, Lee, again, we talked about this a little bit last week, but the Body by Eats book launched.
Yes, it did.
This past week, and for people who bought it through the FitCast, I'm hooking you up with a free Lift Strong bracelet, so you get to... kind of help out a cause by doing that as well. And the bracelets are cool. I like them. But
I didn't know you were doing that.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't really. I only wrote about it on Facebook. I didn't do it in the review. I wrote a review for Lee's book, which I got again. I got to listen to an audiobook, and getting to listen to Lee for 6+ hours was awesome.
Oh, you're so good. It went good. The launch went good. Everyone so far has been really happy about the book, and the only thing that there's been, I guess, some like option wishes, I guess, is some people, you know, wish they could like just buy the book and not be a part of the site, or just be a part of the site and not buy the book, that are like buyers for other things. So we're relaunching in like literally like 10 days so that people can have the option of just getting the book, or just getting the book and recipes, or just getting the book and the site, etc. So options, basically. But everyone's response to the actual book has been really, really good. So I'm happy. I think that it came out good. I mean, I knew it wasn't going to be like a staple, like the Fat Loss Troubleshoot would be, you know, but it's, I think that it talks about things that not other people have really touched on, which I, you know, I think that is kind of rare a little bit in the industry. And it just kind of breaks apart a few things that I think are dogma and need to at least be looked at. It's not like my word is definitive per se, but I think it just opens up your mind to examine things a little bit more. And that was the point. Not to take my word for it, but to be able to either look at it yourself or to at least just be critical, more critical thinking. Which every time I say that, I just think of Jamie Hill. And if anyone hasn't looked at Jamie Hill, definitely check out Jamie Hill, because I think that he's kind of a really good guy of the industry. And I've even said this to him, he's horrible at marketing. So find him. Find him, because he won't find you. And I mean that with love towards Jamie.
Let's get his butt on the show.
Yeah, we should. He's a really good guy. He is a really good guy, and he is out there, and he is a really good guy, and I really like his stuff a lot. So anyway, yeah, that's that. So more critical thinking, people. It's my fave.
I want to quickly mention that in the desserts ebook, I'm a big fan of the chocolate salt sticks. Not only the name, but... it's something that I was able to make 2 days ago, and they were really good.
Yeah.
Straight up, it's a chocolate salt stick.
It's a chocolate salt stick.
What's wrong with you?
And I don't know how to comment to that, but yeah. I had a really fun time naming the names there.
So did you take all these pictures, or how did you do
that? No. People have asked me that. Like, no, I can't take a picture to save my life. Okay. They were either photos that were, you know, like stock photos, or they were taken by a photographer, a paid photographer. So, and we didn't do a picture for every single one because it's really expensive. So we kind of, the first couple ones we're doing like, you know, 19 to 20 pictures, 18 to 20 pictures for every like 30 recipes, that kind of thing. And then hopefully, you know, if we see that things go good, which it looks like it will, then we're going to try and do a pitch for every single one, because it's actually a pet peeve of mine for cookbooks to not have pictures. And I really wanted to try and do as many pictures as I wanted, as I could for the books. So, yeah, but I can't take it.
Have you, I'm guessing this is a dumb question, but, the stuffed apples,
mm-hmm.
What do you think?
What do you mean, what do I think? Do I think they're good?
Yeah, is that something I would
just feel
enjoy?
Like there's an innuendo out there I missed.
No,
no, they're really good. That's actually one of my favorites. I came up with that like years ago, because I was trying to, I had an oatmeal problem for a while, and I was trying to limit my oatmeal intake per like time I took it in, and I was like, you know, let me just stuff like an apple, I'll get the oatmeal. And so it's not like it's brand new either, and I'm sure 1,001 people have stuffed an apple with oatmeal, but yeah, it's really good. It really is, and it travels well, surprisingly. Like it carries well.
Looks so like a bitchin' part of my pre-training meal.
Should be. It is pretty bitchin'. The
bitchin'
word bitchin'
approved. Too. It is.
Bitchin'.
So, other than that, Lee, what's up at the LeePeel.com?
Well, I'm I'm really researching right now. It's a weird obsession that I just developed, but I'm researching music and training on a kind of a deeper level. There's a lot of research with like music and training, and I'm doing some random quote unquote non-peer-reviewed Leap Hill studies that are just for my benefit more than anybody else, because it's not like I could really do anything with them. But I'm having fun like monitoring people, and you know, all I can really monitor is like heart rate and caloric increases, but it's fun. And so I'm just kind of studying how music affects training sessions, and then there's actual research, like good research that's peer review. It's been done that I'm looking at too. But so I'm working on a series that's going to keep coming out with that. And then just things in general. My next post is going to be why you don't want to post on forums, or what you learn about forums, or something like that, where it's going to tackle some things that you see on forums that you should disregard. My favorite point is going to be the "this is my list of meals" post. It's my favorite post. Yeah. So anyway,
accuracy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just stuff like that. I don't have anything that's, I guess, groundbreaking coming, but just some fun stuff is coming up.
I got a question for you, Lee.
What?
I've been looking since listening to the book, and you wrote an article on this a couple months ago.
That's, the puppies are barking.
That's my dog. The GoWare Fits and the Body Bugs, which one would you recommend over the other?
It's funny because I wrote an article on that. I did. I wrote a comparison article too, actually. It's on my blog. I'll link you to it. But right off the bat, like while we're on the show, I like the GoWare better. It just seems to be their customer service a little bit better. Their accuracy seems to be about the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the price is a little bit cheaper for the GoWare, at least last look. It could be different now, because it seems to be changing all the time.
You got them on eBay for about $100.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so I personally work with them more now. I was working with the Body Bugs more, but I'm working with those more now, and their customer service responds faster. And the price, at least last looked, was a little bit cheaper. So that's why I went with them. But
cool.
As far as the actual technical specs, I didn't really see much of a difference. It seemed to be the GoWares were a little bit more sensitive. But then that could have just been the model, too, because they made a new Body Bug model. And that one I haven't been able to test towards the new GoWare model. So that was that. But there is actually an article on my blog that compares the two and talks about the benefits, etc.
Again, I'll have to check that out, and I'll throw that in the show notes for everyone else. I'm going to write that right now. And last thing I want to quickly mention, it's somewhat fitness related. Did we mention this last week? Because I keep getting more and more emails about this every week. Like, we didn't mention this, but that Madonna fired Tracy Anderson.
Yeah,
did we mention that?
I thought we did. Like,
yeah.
Off air.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about it on air.
We didn't talk about it on air, no.
John, you're my go-to Tracy Anderson fan.
I love everything that she does, really. So
did you get her new DVD?
Get it, dude. I got the.
Did you get the?
So I got everything. I got the outtakes. I got the bonus segments. I got everything. Whatever she talked about.
Oh, you got the special edition.
Yeah.
With the updated visual effects.
Yeah. Yeah. It was plated in gold because that's what it is. It's gold.
Does it come with a gold grill for your mouth, too?
It comes with instant genius pills.
Ooh.
Yep. It's been researched.
Genius is spelt wrong.
Yep. It's been researched for 10 years, and it helps to knit your brain into more genius.
Oh, she got a brain knitting pill.
Brain knitting pill. That's what I got.
Oh, that helps.
Yep.
Nice.
We'll be right back with the mailbag. Stick around.
Genius.
Okay, first question that we have is for Jonathan. Hi, Kevin and crew. The question is for John. After 2 months of physical therapy, a cortisone shot, and finally an MRI.
Wait.
Is that supposed to be cortisol?
Cortisol.
Well, they spelled it wrong. And finally, an MRI arthrogram. I've been diagnosed with a labral tear in my right hip. mid-anterior labral tear with some associated labral fraying. Mid-superior labral enlargement with intra-substance degenerative signal. Posterior superior labral fraying with labral acetabular.
Nice.
Thanks, man. Cleft. Labral superior predominant.
Lateral.
Lateral superior predominant femoral head and marginal acetabular chondrosis.
Chondrosis.
Chondrosis. Shut up, John. Let me read the question.
You did well.
You did well.
You took the bullet for me, Kevin.
Yeah.
That's I just want to let the audience know that he took the bullet for me.
Good luck reading that in the air. I'm heading to see a surgeon to discuss a possible hip arthroscopy. I've been doing a ton of plank work and mostly upper body lifts for the last couple of months, as even something as simple as incline walking causes me pain. Is there anything that I can be doing wrong to, A, prepare myself better for the surgery, and B, are there any weighted lower body movements that won't cause me more pain? I miss my squats. Thanks for your help, Terry. Terry, that, I would like to know how that happened too.
Yeah, you know what? That's the interesting thing about hip labral tears. It's not a new diagnosis, but it's coming to the forefront more recently. And in general, when we see diagnoses of the moment. So that everyone has this 1 year, and then everyone seems to be diagnosed with that 1 year. And usually, it has to do with the way that we evaluate things. So as we find better ways to evaluate problems, what we once would have called, hip acetabular impingement would now be a hip labral tear, because we've gotten better at trying to figure out exactly what it is. There's not a lot of research, consistent research done on what is the best way to deal with this. I mean, obviously, if it's true labral tear, then surgery should be effective. That's the same thing that A-Rod just went through before the season. As far as rehab goes, we don't know what the best methods are yet. That research has not been done. So right now it's clinical commentary, which is just looking at experts and what and how they handle their hip labral conditions. So there's not too much to be able to tell. If you've already gone through 2 months of physical therapy, then either the therapy wasn't good, or physical rehabilitation or strength training or whatever is not going to help your condition. So if it was good therapy, then there's really nothing that I could offer to you without having an examination, and I doubt that I'd be able to offer anything different than what you'd already gone through. If it wasn't good therapy, then my best suggestion would be to try to get a second opinion from another therapist, maybe someone that might deal with this more often. Usually you see these issues with active individuals and athletes, because to tear the labrum of the hip is you tend to need something repetitive, traumatic. It's not just the type of thing that most people will experience through everyday activities. Other than that, the general approach is you're looking at what the impairments are. There may be some range of motion impairments. You may have increased external rotation, decreased internal rotation, one of the cardinal signs of any type of hip pathology, like an anterior impingement pathology, is a flexion, internal rotation, and adduction recreating your symptoms. So that's one of the first things that we look at, a Faber test, which is flexion, abduction, and external rotation may be positive, but that's usually positive on most people, and it has poor sensitivity for any one specific problem, and just indicates possible general hip or lumbar spine pathology going on there. So make sure that, you know, you did receive good therapy, but other than that, I'd say go right back to a therapist, because being able, you know, what you're able to do and what you're not able to do is really going to lead where the what type of exercises you would do, but flexibility of the hip flexors, activity of the glutes, stuff like that is a general prescription. But other than that, I really couldn't give you much more, because it can be too specific to give you a general plan, especially if walking is hurting. So,
hey, John.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you a somewhat related question that you know, I'd just like to get a couple different views on?
Sure.
When we look at doing any kind of soft tissue work in the adductors,
mm-hmm.
Do you like to get like a foam roller up onto a massage table and do it standing up, or do you do it lying down with your hip at like 90 degrees and your knee at 90 degrees?
Yeah, I usually have them doing lying down. That way they can get more body weight on it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of hard to do it standing up. That's a weird place to foam roll in general. So it can – you know, usually, like, the best place I find for foam rolling, I use it a lot on, like, the IT band or lateral structures because that can be a really difficult thing to stretch. Mm-hmm. But things like the adductors are pretty easy to stretch and pretty easy for a patient or a client to be able to stretch on their own. So although I might use the foam roller there, it's not as often because it is a difficult position to get into, but usually laying down because at least you get the full body weight.
Gotcha.
So, if I can just ask, so you feel that in a sense of something like that area, that if you can do a static and would you include dynamic work there as well, then you can kind of opt out for foam roller and you feel just kind of anecdotally speaking, whatever, that would be just as beneficial than the foam roller work there?
You know, the thing is, and it's funny because this happens all the time, right? Now everyone's doing dynamic warm-ups, which is great. It's a good tool, but suddenly everyone's forgotten their static stretching.
Yeah, love.
Yeah, and it's just foolish. I mean, we've had a few pretty good studies talking about, well, static stretching might decrease your power output, you know, if you do it immediately before, and now everyone doesn't want to do static stretching
because everyone's getting ready to jump, right?
Yeah, right. And it's just it's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. If you have a shortened structure, you need to stretch it, and that needs to be static stretching. You can't. You may impact the neuromuscular components of flexibility by dynamic warm-ups, and that's great. But if you have a true shortening of muscle, 10 leg swings are not going to increase your range of motion from a shortened structure. It'll just relax that tissue so that you may get greater range. But, you know, something like – and especially when we deal with an anterior hip. You know, if I have shortened hip flexors – the last thing I want to do is some dynamic swings. That's probably going to kill me. So, you know, static stretching, when we're looking at, especially from the clinical point of view, I need things that the patient can do. They can take them home and they can do them often to help their course of treatment. Static stretching is a very simple tool that you can use, and it tends to be very effective. So foam rolling is something that I may or may not do in the clinic. It just depends on the presentation. If that person doesn't need soft tissue work, they're not doing foam roller, you know. Or it could be just like, hey, look, if you got a foam roller at home, go ahead and use it if you want to, but it's not going to affect my course of treatment here. You know, and I think that people also tend to kind of misunderstand, and a lot of the questions we get are kind of like that, like, oh, I have this problem, what can I do? I have this problem, what can I do? Well, if it's symptomatic at this point, it's not – it probably won't be the same course of events as you would have had before it was symptomatic. So just because a foam roller is good for you to maintain your health or your movement or whatever, it doesn't always mean that it's going to be helpful after you've had symptoms and you've had painful, you know, issues occur and something different is going on than it was the day before. So it's a good tool. It's a useful tool. It doesn't mean you use it every single time. It doesn't mean I use soft tissue work every single time. It doesn't mean I use joint MOBs every single time. It's what's called for based on the impairments at that moment.
Are you saying it depends, John?
Golly.
Son of a bitch.
Damn it. One size does not fit all. Man.
Bastard. Good answer. I think that what you said though is just really good, and I think that a lot of people definitely need to pay attention to that because I think that that's a small, very simple point, very overlooked. Good
I stuff, think John. People just miss when we talk about it in the past episodes too.
Yeah,
I know John's talked about it before, but
yeah, it's just in the way that it's said. I think it. You know, it's just particularly like, you know, to just outward come out and say, well, you know, you can static stretch because it is kind of, you know, looked down upon.
Yeah.
Like I talked to some coaches about it and they're just like, what? How dare you? And I'm like, what do you think? Everybody's getting ready to jump? Like, what do you, like, not everyone's getting ready to sprint on a track field. Like, it's good. It has its purpose.
Of course.
But at the same time, I'm not Dr. John Fass. And I always like to hear Dr. John Fass's point of view on things.
Doctor. And all right, so I'll blow it open. I mean, the one major post that I've been wanting to work on, but I have no time, was actually based on something that I read in a popular fitness magazine. And it was a quote from some strength coach about, I think it was leg extensions. Well, it was. I don't remember what else it was, but it's something about leg extensions. And he said, you know, leg extension, you know, drop your leg extensions. Okay, fine. And I'll be the first to admit that I was right on that bandwagon, you know, even very recently. But he said, you know, they work great in rehab, but, you know, if you're not, you know, if your knees don't hurt or whatever, then they'll be bad for you. Well, first, there's no evidence for that. None. Zero. Zilch. There's no evidence that knee extensions are bad for you at all. But secondly, what defines rehab? I mean, is it pain? Mm-hmm. Because I can have, you know, I can take pictures of your spine and see bulging discs that have no symptoms. I can take pictures of your shoulders that show impingements. They show, you know, labral tears. Same thing with the hips, the knees, everywhere. I could take pictures and you'll have something wrong, but you have no pain. So what's the difference between a leg extension if you have pain and if you don't have pain? If the same thing is going on the insides and we don't understand the process of pain, why someone will get, you know, lumbar symptoms with minimal disc herniation, and then we'll have someone with a very large herniation that they're asymptomatic. You know, so people need to start to critically analyze what they're reading and honestly what they're regurgitating, the information. You know, I've read forums where someone said, hey, you know, I went to the doctor. They said, well, you know, get your quad stronger, do leg extensions. And then like five people responded, well, I would never trust a doctor that would tell me that. Really? Really? What's your basis for information that you would never trust a physician that did an evaluation and decided that they had quad weakness? Just because we've determined that people are quad dominant versus hip dominant doesn't mean that the quads are strong. It just means that they may be stronger relative. But you may still benefit from quad strengthening or from whatever strengthening. And the evidence is very clear there that the best way to strengthen a muscle is a combination of isolation and compound. It's not just compound. Everyone thinks that they can squat their way to stronger knees. And it doesn't always work that way either. So, you know, stuff like that, it ties right into what we're talking about with like flexibility and stretching. Suddenly, static stretching is the worst thing you can ever do. And that's nonsense. And it's starts to get frustrating when you look at things and you start looking at them critically and saying, where's this information coming from? There's no basis for this. There's no actual evidence. You know, so. All right, that was my diatribe.
So now you're going to write that?
Yeah, I was thinking of it.
You can just take this segment and put it on your blog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want, I'll cut it out for you and do it, Joe.
Nah, it's all good in the hood.
What?
Nice. You go off on all that, and then you say it's all good in the hood. That is what makes you you.
That's keeping it real.
Yep. Yes.
All right. Lee, I got a question for you.
Fine, I'll try and follow that up.
From Bonnie. Hey guys, first off, loved episode 150. It was fun to listen to all the clips and recaps on my commute to and from work. My question is about working out in the morning. I've always been more of a night person and typically had jobs that allowed me to work later in the day. That always worked well for me. I could get up when I felt rested, grab some breakfast, and do my training before heading to work. My work schedule has been changing, though, and I've had to be creative around some long work days, usually around 10 or 11 hours plus an hour commute each way. I find that I get my best workouts in the afternoon and evening up until around 10 p.m. For a while, I've been was able to get to the gym just before closing time, but that just isn't realistic for me now. I've been getting up early to do my training before work, but find that my workouts are not successful. I generally feel run down, weak, and even get a bit of nausea if I push things too hard. I have to drop the weight significantly to get all the reps in for my lifts. It's frustrating. I hesitate to drink coffee before my workouts because I'm worried it would really dehydrate me when I'm already feeling a bit dehydrated in the morning. What do you recommend? Will my body eventually adjust to this, or should I make some dietary changes early in the day? I'm having a protein shake in the morning, protein shake to get me going, so I'm not working out on an empty stomach. I really appreciate any advice you can offer. Thanks.
Well, let's see. The first, will you adjust at all? to the schedule change. There usually is a period of adjustment when someone switches their schedule over. Some people it comes easier than for others, it seems, but it's just kind of your internal clock getting readjusted. So there can be some increase and change there, but for some not. There's other problems, but just to answer that question, yes, there could be. I wouldn't depend on it, though. I don't know what your training is specifically. I would say, you know, can you look at maybe cutting back on, you know, your volume of work, maybe, you know, throw in like a lower kind of thing, or maybe try and adjust your actual workouts to fit your routine as well. So that when you're doing, I know a lot of people that I work with that do morning training do a little bit better, starting to split up the work, just because they just don't train as well in the morning. Other people excel at it though, so it really depends. But look into your actual program as well and see if you can make any adjustments to make everything a little bit more efficient. You know, see if you can do anything on off days when you're not working, things like that. So you can look at those little things as well. As far as the just kind of simple answer, drinking coffee and you're afraid you're going to be dehydrated. The only reason why you'd really be dehydrated from drinking coffee is if you weren't drinking any water. Granted, you know, coffee can increase dehydration on small levels, but it's only relative to what it is that you're taking in. So, you know, if you're taking in a substance that, you know, has a little bit of a dehydration effect, if you compensate properly, that you should be fine. So as far as that, you know, it's a personal choice, but if you want to drink coffee, just, you know, drink more water. My biggest thing though is you say you're drinking a protein shake before you get going, but that's not going to really help you with energy. Protein is, you know, going to help you with your muscle, and that's great, but it's not going to do jack for your energy. Some people have a hard time eating in the morning, and I understand that, but what I would look into is things that you can eat in the morning that are carbohydrate based, and you can mix in some fat with the carbohydrate as well, and get your energy that way. Carbohydrates are going to be what supplies you with the energy. You might find just eating a banana with that shake could increase your workload output dramatically. So again, if you're a morning person, you have a hard time eating, that this might be a little bit of a struggle for you, but I would do what you could to maybe, you know, you can take in simple sugars as well if you find that a little bit easier to digest, like throw in you know, some dextrose in your shake, or just personally, I love chocolate milk. I mean, it saves me from feeling like I'm going to crash whenever I'm having to push, and it's really simple and it's easy and it's usually not too hard. You can also get Lactaid brands, etc. So it doesn't have lactose, but, you know, look into your options of getting some carbohydrates in you, and maybe a little bit of fats. And you might find that alone will help increase your workout abilities.
Alrighty. Wasn't there, I thought there was a study even questioning the idea of coffee as a dehydrating because of the fact that it's in liquid medium.
Yeah, I mean, recently. You know, it's more of an anecdotal thing. Yeah. And I can't even tell you. I can't even tell you. I mean, I know that I've read things that are based around, you know, I don't even know if it's the coffee. I don't even know if it's the coffee itself, if it has to do with caffeine alone. I don't even know. It's not something that I've really examined. I know it's kind of an anecdotal based thing. I know that I remember there being references to it when discussing some stuff during, I want to say it was Ultimate Diet 2.0 through Lyle. Mm-hmm. So I know that there were some references there. But that's about all that I can remember right now. But good catch. Good catch.
Beer makes me pee. Next email is actually more of a make fun of personal trainers type of thing, which is always amusing.
John just
This is my lead up, Kevin. Just had to write and share after attempting to give my commercial gym one more chance. I'm greeted by a personal trainer standing in front of a client that is balancing on a foam roller while working with a medicine ball. Quit going to this gym a couple months ago because watching the personal trainers, ETs. They're driving me crazy, and I can't help but see them as they like to get your attention by blocking equipment, not using, but blocking, while working with clients. Did I mention that one personal trainer is so old that he sits while he trains people, and another is very, very prego? And this is a multi-state commercial gym quality. Enjoy the podcast. Thanks for all that you do, Jeannie.
What's wrong with if the trainer's pregnant?
I don't have a problem with
that. Nothing wrong with that.
No. I don't have a problem with that.
I do have a problem with people saying prego. I don't like ever since, but what's that movie that came out?
Lego My Prego?
No, the movie with that woman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Oh, I sound like such an idiot, but no, the...
And in a moment of clarity, Kevin...
It has Michael Cera in it, where he plays Michael Cera. That's the guy he plays in. Okay. Juno, thank you.
Oh.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Next email that we have comes from Alan. Hey, guys, the question is, it's for Lee. I've recently completed a nutrition course as part of my personal trainer certification in the UK. I was told about doing cardio first thing in the morning on an empty stomach was a waste of time, as fat can only be burned in the presence of glucose. So if you do fasted cardio, you are only burning muscle tissue. I've also just purchased Tom Venuta's Burn the Fat ebook, and he says that fasted cardio is extremely effective, as there is nothing but fat to burn first thing in the morning. I'm a 37-year-old male and around 18% body fat with a decent amount of muscle and would like to get to around 10%. I find this confusing. Should I do fasted cardio or not? If so, should I take a shot of espresso and some aminos first to protect my muscle? Thanks for the info. Love the podcast.
It's funny because I guess I thought I answered this question last week. I guess I didn't because I read it. First, to the caffeine thing, I just looked up and apparently there was a study that debunks it. I haven't looked at it yet, but it does look like to be that the caffeine dehydration thing is a myth, John. Good call. Anyway, as to the question, I'm just saying, I give credit where credit's
due. No, that's
where credit's due. I didn't, you know, I wasn't critically thinking. As to the question, you know, to pigeonhole Tom and say that he only supports like fasted morning cardio, I know that that's not true. He talks about it, but he says specifically in Burn the Fat, that it's, you know, an if option. You can look into it, and he gives some benefits to it, and I believe he even gives some, there can be some cons as well, and he gives the cons. So just don't want anyone to think that it's really a personal decision. I'm not a huge fan of fasted working out, period, be it morning, night, whatever. It's not something that I do a lot with my clients. It's not something I do a lot with myself. It's not to say that it can't have some benefits for people and that people can enjoy it. It's just not something that I really get into. I'm more for feeding the workout. I don't like worrying about fat that's burned during a workout. I think that it's a minute point to worry about. I like focusing on getting the most out of your workout. And then if you burn fat, you know, burn it throughout the day. And in my personal opinion, I like to protect the system when most at stressed. And I like to provide energy when most need. That's kind of how I look at things. You know, if I'm needing to do something that needs a lot of energy and performance enhancement, then let me enhance that as much as possible with nutrition support. To me, training should be about health, and it should be about performance, and it should be about muscle mass, things like that, and then days caloric burn all total if you need something like that. Nowhere in that to me is fat burning. And it's just my personal experience, and it's just what I like to do. I don't like fat burning exercises. It's just not something that I like. I don't like the whole mantra of it. So for me personally, you're not really going to find me standing on the fasted cardio bandwagon or fasted workout bandwagon or any sort of like ultra burn intensity fat loss workouts, that kind of thing. It's just not my scene. I like to have both pre and post workout nutrition. It doesn't have to be intense or any sort of, you know, micro timings or things like that. Eat, you know, but if you're going to do it fasted cardio, I like doing it if it needs to happen at a low-grade pace. I don't like interval cardio work or high intensities, things like that. I think if you're going to do fasted cardio, do it at a low-grade level. That way you're going to decrease any chances of burning out, overstressing the system. I don't really worry too much about going catabolic or anything like that, but it can exist. It is a place for that to occur. So I guess my take-home point is there's a lot of other things to focus on other than a fasted workout. And I think that you'd be best to just focus on your nutrition overall, your training overall, do the training for your actual need, body, muscle, things like that, and worry about the calorie and caloric burn in the overall day, and just put your nutrition around your training time. That's me. So, but you're going to find a lot of people that disagree with that.
So. John, I got another question for you.
Word.
Dear FitCast, I have uneven glutes. The right one is slightly bigger and I think more stronger and stable. It's not obvious to everyone else except for my chiropractor, which at first we thought was just swollen, and in my suit pants, the right pocket gaps more than the left, and I believe it's part of the cause of the low back pain in my left side that I've been slowly healing from the last in the past 2 years. Finally, along with the stabbing pain that I'm randomly getting in my right hip when I'm climbing stairs, only when I'm trying to skip a step, so lunging upwards gives me pain. I don't have a desk job. I stand and walk all day for my job. I do squat, deadlift, and lunge with no problem, but I have to warm up and do dynamic stretching. Can you tell me what the consequences could be if I don't even things out, and how do I go about correcting things? Very interesting question. Oh, P.S. I know what it's been. It might be a funny question, but I've been a listener since episode one, so I won't be offended by the obvious Sir Mix-a-Lot jokes.
Nice. Very
nice.
Yeah,
it's nice. I hope you're testing more than just by the size of the glutes. Has poor inter and intra rater reliability to actually physically look at a muscle and determine strength by size. So it means that one person has poor reliability doing that, and the next guy does too. So it's not very easy to see that, to say, oh, this must be weak because it's a little smaller. Having said that, what could happen? Nothing could happen, or lots of things could happen. I mean, it sounds to some extent that you're getting some symptoms that may or may not be related to that glute strength. But in general, you can go right back to that first question. You can have some hip problems, impingements, and things like that. You can certainly have some back issues. You may have some knee issues too. You just go up and down the chain when there's asymmetry. So when one side of the body is stronger than the other, or more importantly, when the other side of the body is weaker, then you have changes and alterations in movement. And over time, that the idea is that could lead to some type of overuse of an area of the body. So you'll have problems at the joint because there's a loading difference, there's a movement difference, range of motion difference, and all that may ultimately lead to something. But then again, it may not. You don't know. In general, the course of evaluation for any type of physical therapist or physical evaluation is that you've got a complaint. There's something that you can or cannot do that may be pain limited. It may be strength limited, whatever. And then we look for the impairments. What's actually going on there? What can we trace back? So you've got this glute weakness. Well, maybe if you had full glute strength, then whatever is causing you pain would go away and you'd be able to do the things that you need to do. So in general, you're going to go, again, isolation into integration into combined techniques. So maybe that's isolated glute strengthening and then going into your bridges, going into your sit to stands and then your squats and your lunges and things like that. But you need to get the activity going and the strength going. And actually I rewind just for a second too when I was just briefly talking about the leg extensions. The idea is not that everyone should go out and do leg extensions again. It's just that you don't know if you should or shouldn't. And I think that was the take on point. Same thing here. Like, everyone does these, I need glute activation exercises. I need to strengthen the posterior chain. You don't know that you do until you assess and analyze whether or not you do. So some people will need to strengthen the glutes. Some people will need to strengthen the quads. The same thing could be here. So maybe this individual does need to strengthen the glutes. Maybe he also needs greater flexibility in the hip flexors. Maybe he needs greater flexibility of his quads. Maybe he needs greater flexibility of his hamstrings. I don't know the answers to that. But, you know, in general, treat the impairments, and hopefully that takes care of the issue.
All right, John, we got another one for you.
Just popular today.
Super.
My squat range of motion is in serious need of improvement. I can body weight squat all the way to the floor while holding onto something for balance, but I can't barbell squat past 90 degrees of knee bend without my heels raising or my body bending excessively forward at the waist. I did some research on T-Nation and found an article by Cosgrove that says lack of range of motion is likely caused by muscle imbalances and stability issues around the pelvic lumbosacral region and not knee or ankle issues. Any comments or suggestions? Thanks for the help. Brent, Canada.
Yeah, I mean, I think the take-home message of that article is that most of us are pretty bad at squatting because we don't do it during the day most often. And even when we do, we're braced. So the most that we squat is to sit on the toilet or to sit in a chair, basically. If we pick something up from the floor, we're usually bending at our backs. And if we're sitting down, we just kind of, you know, throw ourselves down into the chair or the couch or whatever. So we don't really learn how to control our descent. And when you don't learn how to do that properly, then you're just going to go back to the things that make the most sense to you. So holding on to something, when we're unbalanced, we're not, our center of gravity is shifted, and so we don't have control over our movement. When you're holding on to something, you're able to basically mask that problem. So your center of gravity could be shifted backwards, but by holding on to something in front of you, that's not an issue anymore. Once you're loaded, you've got a back squat going, a front squat, whatever, those problems become magnified by the increase of the weight. So you are probably having some proprioceptive issues. You're not aware of your positioning. When you go up on the knee, on the toes, you're trying to compensate your inability to use hip flexion or to use the glutes or eccentric quad control or whatever it is by just kind of moving forwards and just keeping yourself balanced, even though the position in and of itself is less balanced. What I would suggest is pushing through the heels. It's the same kind of advice that we typically give. Use your heels. Use the hip flexion. This is one of those times where nose over the toes and don't let your knees go past your toes can really help to guide your movement, because what you want to do is you want to allow your hip extensors to eccentrically control your motion downwards. You don't have to go all the way down to the floor. You just have to go as far as is comfortable and continue working that level. So box squats here can be very helpful. Just unloaded body weight box squats, just to give you something to work with as a goal point. So I'm going to tap the box and stand up. The next week I lower the box by an inch or two. Tap the box and stand up and keep working that way until you're able to control your motion downwards. In a situation like this, a good personal trainer can be really valuable, because they can also give you hints and make sure you're being honest in your motion so that you're moving the proper way and you're learning how to do it properly. And any other thoughts, suggestions to that, or?
I'm good.
Sounded good.
Okay. All right. Next one's for Lee. Hello, Kevin and company. I'm a new listener of the FitCast. I read Kevin's articles on T-Nation and decided to give your show a try. I checked it out and was really impressed with the informative and entertaining content you guys have on here. Not if they listen to this week's Off Topic. There are so many interesting interviews with the majority of the biggest names in fitness and nutrition. That's really cool, guys, so thanks for the awesome show. I've already subscribed and listened to probably about 20 episodes, and I'm working on more. I don't know if you guys have addressed this before, but what are your opinions on fasting? I've read a lot about it growing within the weightlifting community and was wondering if any of you think it is beneficial and worth giving a try. I noticed that Lee Peel had an interview with Martin Birkin, right? of leangains.com. So I thought she might have some good insight on it. That guy seems to be getting some amazing results with the clients on his website, and you should consider doing an interview with him for the show. Thanks for taking the time to read my email, and please keep up the good work. You've gotten a new listener, and I plan on sticking around. Best regards, Johnny Masis.
Fasting, you know, it's a really a huge topic, and there's a lot that can be discussed. So the question is a bit vague. I'm not exactly sure what you want to know specifically. I can kind of tie it in a little bit, you know, like with the last question that I answered, you know, should you do like a fasted state cardio? I want to make sure to interject that I'm not saying that you can't do a fasted workout. I'm saying that overall, in general, for most people, I don't like it. But that doesn't mean that you can't do a fasted workout and there can't be benefits for it. And as far as fasting goes, it's a mixed bag. Overall, I'll just give my opinion. And my opinion is that I think that it works great for some people. I think that for others, it makes them want to eat a house and can make things worse. I think to say that anything is going to fit for everyone is just not going to be a true statement. Martin is meticulous. He might be one of the most meticulous researchers I've ever talked to. He will examine it. The reason he hasn't come out with a book is because he's just that meticulous, and it's coming, but only when he's absolutely satisfied with the study and research that he has found. So when the book finally is released, and I'm still betting it's probably going to be another 1 or 2 years, but when it finally is released, I'm sure it'll probably be the most comprehensive book that you've ever read on fasting there is, and I could probably already recommend it now. So his work is really good. He's very objective. He really takes his time to look at all the studies and all the research. And he also does a lot of work with his clients. I don't think it's for everybody. And I think that there's pros and cons to it. Some people respond to it great. Some people don't. And the variables of why you would respond to it good would be different. You know, and there's also different kinds of fastings. You know, there's all day, there's alternate day, there's one meals a day. I mean, there's so many variations that you can throw into it. So what you really have to look out and look at, in my opinion, is, you know, see what works for you. You can look over the guidelines. The base guidelines are there in his blog. You could also get a book like Eat Stop Eat by Brad Pilon, whatever, however you say his name. And you can look into that for just some base general guidelines. Try and work it around your training. Do a FASTA training, do non-FASTA training, see what you respond to. You know, because some people lifting, I find that people doing their lifting, strangely enough, seem to respond better to FASTA state training than they seem to respond to in cardio work. Don't know why, but it just seems to be that there's like a little bit overall, anecdotally speaking, better response. There has been some research in it, but from the research I have seen, and I want to make sure that that's expressive, I have not seen the nutrition protocols be that good, or the training be that realistic to what someone who is really into a serious lifting session would be into. And again, that's just what I've seen. So, like I said, try it for yourself if you're curious about it. I don't think it's a bad thing, but I think that it should be very expressively clear that there's a difference between also like the kind of fasting that's being discussed on these boards and in his blog and through Brad versus like the Hollywood fasting lemonade cleanse diet. Those are like two completely different things. So for anyone that's listening that isn't aware of that culture, definitely examine it before you hear what I say and then go to the drugstore and get the Hollywood like lemonade diet fast program. It's two different things. So definitely do your investigative work on the topic. If you're not aware of what's going on, follow people that are aware of what's going on. And if you have any specific questions, then, you know, of course, write in and I'll do the best I can to cover the topic. And it's something that I look into, but certainly not on a level like someone like Martin looks into, as it is his primary research. So he's definitely a good source for more in-depth looks at that. So hopefully that somewhat answered the question for the guy, because it was a little vague. It's a little bit of a vague question.
John, I guess I'm supposed to ask the next question.
I don't know. Well, or you could answer it.
You could answer it because it says to you.
We could both do it in English accents.
Do you want to just alternate words?
I don't think so.
Oh.
You want to step it up, John?
That would probably be horrible.
All right, John, do it. You have to do it. No, you have to do it as you're from England, though.
Okay. I'm from England and love your show. Listening to actual discussion about fitness-related topics sure beats reading two-page blurbs in magazines. I've recently started the Fat Loss Program in Lewin Allen's New Rules of Lifting, and I'm seeing good results. I have no plans to deviate from the program anytime in the near future, but I am curious about turbulence training. Allen is quoted on Craig's site as saying it is the single most effective fat loss training system in the world today. Is Allen's Fat Loss Program in New Rules of Lifting the same program or second best? P.S. I'm not from England. I just wanted to hear your English accent. Cheerio. Doug from British Columbia.
Kind
of. Oh, he said also go Man U.
Go Man U! Cheeky buggers.
And Vinny Jones. Alright, so yeah, no, this is a really good question because I can see how some people would, you know, start thinking about this a little bit. But basically, with what Allen does and what Craig does, when we talked about this in the past, they kind of base their programs around utilizing the effects of EPOC. So when you look at how their programs are set up, they're similar, they're not the same. Craig has definitely gone on to make some very much varied programs. Like, he has bodyweight workouts, he has stuff that he does with kettlebells now, and with the stuff that Allen does in New Rules of Lifting, again, it's kind of the same setup, but what Allen does is he also threw in a hypertrophy and a strength phase as well. But for the fat loss stuff, yeah, you know, I kind of am on the same boat with Lee here, though, that, you know, no matter what the program, you're still going to have to, the diet is going to be the main component of it. And as Lee says in her book, it's 100%. Which, you know, and again, I think it was either on the Fitcast or on the, I think I wrote this on Twitter or something, and I got a lot of responses from it, but there is no, like, fantastic fat loss program, not something that you're going to do 3 hours in a week, but, you know, you really have to start looking at programs that are going to just save the lean muscle mass that you have when you're in a deficit. And potentially help you add some if you are just untrained, you haven't been in the gym in the last 5 years. But other than that, again, I think Allen just agrees with the programming setup. It's just how they write their programs, and obviously for both of them, it's worked quite well, but they haven't said that nutrition hasn't been a big component of it.
Yeah, I think they're pretty straightforward about, you know, how important nutrition is to the training, and regardless of, you know, the thing about fat loss with any programming, everyone just has to remember it's long and it's hard and it's the stuff that you don't want to do and it's never going to be easy. So just pick up, you know, find the workouts that help you maintain, you know, lean mass and that don't kill you and that you can keep doing. And that, you know, help you get improvement and don't burn you out. And then there you go. And take your pick so you don't get bored. You know, I mean, sure, there's something for structure. I don't want to, I feel like I have to caveat everything I say. But anyway, like, I'm just saying, like, mostly it's just not to get bored. And it's to throw in a little bit of variety, you know? At least that's how I see it, you know?
Plus, I think that Craig's workout came out before New Rules of Lifting. So that was probably the best workout.
Terminal training's been out there since like 2004.
Right. Yeah. So that was probably the most effective fat loss training system in the world in 2004. And then when Allen came out, his was probably the most effective fat loss training system.
And ever since,
bounced back and forth.
You know, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Just kidding.
It's like the Yankees Red Sox.
Allen could really kick my ass in a number of ways, so I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, right?
He got some tips. He got to go to UFC last night, so.
Did he?
Hey, I think we should just jump to the last question because we're at like a long time.
Okay.
Love me long time.
Actually, John, unless you can, I mean, that question's pretty straightforward.
Well, I mean, the last question is, it's just don't even bother.
Okay, let's skip the last question. Let's go to the.
Yeah, I mean, the last question is don't even bother. So have John answer something worthwhile.
Fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
John.
Fine.
Fine.
Lee.
Bye.
Lee.
Kevin.
It's your question, dude.
Whatever. Wow. Okay, so John, for the past few months, I've had some moderate discomfort while performing squats, but only in the right leg. I think it's my hip flexors that are affected. Top of the quad feels like it's in the front. I was wondering if there is a specific movement or stretch you would recommend I incorporate into my regular routine as to avoid this. I have some foam rolling and dynamic stretching prior to hitting the weights, which has helped quite a bit, but I'm curious as to why the tightness has persisted so long. Is this just one of those things whereby I can always expect this and just need to be proactive in my stretching, or could I be aggravating it by continuing the squat? I thought maybe I just needed to rest a bit and scaled back on my workouts, but the pain is always there. It's starting to get really annoying. Is this just because I'm getting older? FYI, I'm a female, 33, and have been lifting for 2 years. Please let me know if you need any additional info in order to answer this question. Thank you so much, Linda.
You know, it could be a number of things. The this is kind of like the tie-in question, I guess, because you got to you talked about dynamic stretching and foam rolling. There's no no static stretching there. So if you've got a tight feeling in the front of your quads, then I suggest you try to stretch the quads, stretch the hip flexor and quads, assuming that there is a shortness there. The standard test is called the Thomas test, where you would lay down on a table or your bed, or you know, something a firm surface. Because if it's your bed and it's too soft, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to figure out what's going on. But if you have some access to, let's say, like a bench at the gym, actually this would work well. And you sit on the bench so that your hips are just hanging off the bench. Pull your knees to your chest. Let one of those knees go. You'll need someone else to take a look at it for you. But your knee should your thighs should be basically parallel to the floor, and your knee should be able to bend 90 degrees. If it's not, then you've got some structures that are tight. So you can stretch out those structures. That would be the front of the quads. I like a stretch where you're putting your foot up against a chair or against, let's say, like a countertop, so that you're bending the knee and you're extending the hip. So that'll get the hip flexors. That'll get the quads as well. You can be more specific to the hip flexors themselves by doing like a kneeling stretch, where the leg is stretched out behind you, and then you're sitting up nice and tall. You can find tons of different stretches online, and that'll be a lot easier to look at than what I'm describing here. But anything that addresses those areas should be helpful. And then the next part is, you know, what might you be doing that's contributing to this pain? You know, what are you doing in your squats? What are you doing in your lunges or whatever it is? You know, is there something that you can fix in terms of your movement that may also help to give your body a rest? As far as continued tightness, and again, tightness is just a feeling, so we don't know what that means. Is it neuromuscular? Is it structural? Is it both? But the fact that dynamic warm-ups and foam rolling seems to help but not eliminate means that there could be both. There could be a structural issue so that you have a shortened muscle, or there could be a neuromuscular issue, which means that there's extra activity going on in the muscle theoretically, and that's what's causing problems. So when you see that, when you see increased neuromuscular activity, the theory, the thought process, again, no actual evidence, but the thought process is that you're overusing an area because another area is being underused. So you don't have the ability to use, let's say, the hip extensors. So your hip adductors are overworking what and their moment arm and extension. That's the idea, and that's why people might complain of like tight hip adductors and they can't do splits. So overactivity in the quads, who knows? I mean, it could be underutilized hip extensors. It could be or too much activity because there's instability at the knee because of ligamentous laxity. I mean, there's a million reasons as to why that might happen. But in general, you're trying to just find those strength deficits and to improve them so that you don't have any further pain and impairment. And that's the general guideline. But like most things, if you can get someone to actually take a look at you and to evaluate what's going on, that may be the most helpful thing.
Very good.
Nice.
What do you guys think? Is that wrap it up?
I'm static stretching right now, in fact.
I was actually doing some ankle mobility work while you're answering that question.
Yeah.
Because in a little bit, I'm going to go into my home gym at Larrabee Strength and Conditioning. Did you hear I opened that up?
You enjoying the garage gym still?
Yeah. No, it's I'm actually going to do some kettlebell work, attach the TRX to the support that holds my garage door, which is somewhat legitimate as a support, and see what happens. I have a spike, because it gives me a reason to have a can of spike.
Which, that's what life is about for you.
Sometimes it is, Lee. You know, sometimes it is.
That's, you know, I'm going to break down and get those TRX things. I've been fighting it. I'm going to break down and get it.
You should. They're awesome. I mean, the only thing I get, and the only thing is the push-ups, man. The push-ups cut up your arms. Well, they don't cut them up, but you'll get, like, bruises on your arms the day after if you do push-ups that aren't with your hands in front of your shoulders. So, bummer. But, yeah, other than that, I want to quickly mention that I picked up some Trader Joe's grass-fed beef. Because I took a picture of it and I threw it on Facebook and people wanted me to get it, so I did. It's like $6 for a pound. Is that good? Do you guys know? Is that a good price?
Well, you know, that's really not that bad. I mean, for grass-fed beef, that's pretty good, actually.
And actually, Lee, okay, I'm going to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
So, as me as a person, would you think it would be better to have...
I feel like this is going to be good.
A half a pound of this grass-fed beef that's 85% lean, or a half a pound of 96% lean beef. You know, the caveat being everyone says that like this grass-fed beef is like salmon.
It's not salmon. It's not the I've looked at the research, and while there is a slight increase in omega activity, I mean, it's just not on, you know, red meat is never going to do what like fresh fish is. It's just not going to do it. I know that people really want to make it happen by altering, you know, their feeding intakes and things like that and changing the course of nature, which apparently we're against, but it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So I mean, I don't see anything wrong with eating the 85% though. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that either, especially if, you know, your diet is, you know, has a good variety and you feel like that you're getting good fats overall. I mean, Kevin, your diet's already, you know, it's you put good focus on your nutrients. So if you feel like you're getting sufficient fat intake and you want to have your 85% because it tastes better, go for it. But for the question of, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to get grass-fed beef now because it's just as good as fish oil. No, it's. Why? It's beef. It is what it is. It's not for that. And that's my issue with it. Like, if you're trying to use red meat or beef to be in place of it's just not, it's not needed. I just think that you're going to benefit getting the, you know, the vitamins and the iron and all that you get from red meat. Use it for that and use the other things for the other things. That's why it's called a variety diet. Eating the same thing all the time. It's no matter what it is. If it's a carrot, if it's grass-fed beef, if you eat the same thing all the time, you're not going to reap the benefits because you're going to become deficient in something. Oh, variety is.
No, sorry. No, I always wanted to look at the omega-3 profile of baby because it's the other white meat.
I hear placenta does amazing things.
Placenta is actually pretty big. If they could get that at Trader Joe's,
yeah,
I'd be benching out of my mind.
Oh, anything to help increase your bench.
Indeed. All right.
Baby
so,
stand.
That's it. We're gonna wrap it up now, and hopefully everyone out there will give you an update when Lee relaunches, so you can check out Body by East if you missed out. Highly recommended. If you want, again, you can, I threw up a review that I feel was somewhat detailed on thefitcast.com that you can check out, and John might blog, and
probably not anytime soon, but when I do, It'll be a doozy.
And if you have ideas for what you want us to do with the off-topic discussion, let us know. Because we've been talking about that.
God.
Give us direction, people.
Yeah, kevin@theficcast.com. Shoot me an email and let me know if you have any ideas about that. For people who got t-shirts, I have all the t-shirts packed up, ready to go to the post office. It's just I have to go to the post office. So once I do that, you will have your t-shirts. They're getting there, I promise. John got a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I got a t-shirt.
You got
I did.
A t-shirt.
I feel special.
Special indeed. John, Pink
yes,
Dumbbell
sir.
Award?
Pink Dumbbell Award will go to
Wait,
Doug.
Let the music play, John.
All right, my bad.
No, Pink John, you guys, I'm going to put the music in.
Yeah, wow,
that was so.
Well, I'm obviously gonna have to do some editing now, Mikio.
Oh my God, John! Guys, I'm gonna put the music in.
John, what are you saying, man?
Nothing. Just saw that you were hurt by that.
John, I will mess it up.
Oh my God, you
Great,
just
I
cursed.
I
gotta
edit that too.
Guys, no cursing on the FitCast.
I'll edit that out. John, give up effing Pink Dumbbell Award.
Pink Dumbbell Award goes to Doug from Surrey, British Columbia, because, one, he lied to us, and two, because he wasn't from England, but it allowed me to use my English accent.
Canada, England, same thing.
Exactly.
It's like the same province, right?
I think they were owned by England once, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Didn't England sell Canada for like $40 to the French?
No. They had something called the War.
Oh, the War.
Yeah.
That thing. Totally played to theirs.
The French Indian War. And they fought for it.
Weird.
And that's why.
You think you'd hear about these things?
Yeah, French and Indian War, that's kind of why Montreal still speaks French, because they refuse to accept.
Hey, shut up, John. One more quick thing. The thing, I just saw this thing on Netflix.
Before the American Revolution.
I got this thing on Netflix. It's a documentary on obesity. Have you guys seen this? It starts off with this 13-year-old or this 12-year-old girl who went in to get plastic surgery. And got liposuction and a tummy tuck. Have you seen this? It's like it's like obesity, the something something killer.
In fact, that's why France was one of our allies in the American Revolution, because they just
John, people don't come to get history on this show. I don't care. If it's history, it's gonna be related to Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
It's
Canadians and the French travel to the West, though, John.
Killer at Large. That's what it's called. Killer at Large. Why obesity is America's greatest threat.
You know what America's greatest threat was in the mid 1700s?
Arrows.
The French and the French and the American Indians.
Okay, but
they fought a war over it.
Well, I mean, it's just worth checking out. I thought it was very cool. Like they had the. You know, clips from the Surgeon General and stuff like that. It was kind of interesting, although I fell asleep watching it. So
I've seen so many of those obesity documentaries, but they always end up pissing me off.
They're all the same. It's like the same facts, though.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you've got a doctor sitting there and be like, well, you need to cut back on your carbohydrate intake, or you need to cut back on your fat intake. It's always some micro, you know, macros, like the evil
it's not
villain.
Just eat less.
And they have the guys, you know, or the girls, like, shopping, and they're picking up all this food, and just because it's a sweet potato and it's healthy, and just because it's these things, and, you know, wheat pasta or what have you. I mean, my God, you can really overeat on wheat pasta easily. And it's just, there's just no baseline education. Just that basic, like, baseline education, it's just completely ignored, and it's just... It's sad. Well, but then also when you get to the point to where you're on a documentary, obvious, the issues are much graver than just that of energy balance too, and let's be honest about that, both mentally and physically. But
exactly, and that's one of the main arguments they brought up. This 12-year-old got liposuction, and then there was a huge stir on nationwide news about how this is ethically wrong and how could you be letting your daughter go get surgery at such a young age. And a year later, she put half the weight back on.
Wow.
And after getting liposuction, that is pretty difficult.
Not to mention, I'm sure it's going to be really interesting looking. How much liposuction did she get? Do you know?
There was like...
was it just minor lipo or something?
No,
or
was it was like seven containers. I think they took out like 30 or 40 pounds, and then she continued to lose weight. But then she started putting it back on, and like they interviewed her again, and she started like, you know, it all came back to her parents like arguing when she was a kid, and she's like, oh yeah, you know, talking about how I used to eat when my parents argued and stuff like that. And they also related to how some people who used to be overweight and are now lean, or lost a bunch of weight, have now turned to other addictions. Like they turn to...
It's very classic.
Turn
you
to drugs.
You move from one, you know, addiction or problem solving or painkiller, if you will, to another. I mean, it's classic. You know, people who stop drinking become sexaholics. People who stop doing drugs, you know, can become overweight. People who are workaholics, et cetera, et cetera. It's always saturating out. It's very, very classic addiction attitude.
That's a bonus for you guys this week of some bonus discussion. All right. We're really going to go. Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to check out thefitcast.com, check out leadpeel.com, check out acceleratedstrength.com. And until next week, John?
I'm Jonathan Fass. I hate when you do that.
Oh, I'm Lee Peel. I was watching Kung Fu Cat.
Yeah,
I thought we were done.
I thought John was actually going to end it with something good. I'm watching Kung Fu Kid.
See? That's why I started laughing.
Oh, that is awesome.
Isn't that funny?
I love how the comment says paint the fence. Sun the floor. Paint the fence. Sun the floor.
Go to YouTube and write Kung Fu Cat, F-O-O. It's funny.
Sand the floor.
Sand the floor.
All right. That's it. I'm pressing stop. See you next week. All right, to the off-topic we go, and it is myself, Lee Peel, and Dr. Jonathan Fass.
I got a funny story about that, actually, because I never do that. I don't, you know, whatever. I mean, it's a title, but whatever. So we went to a UFC party last night. We always go to my boy Val's apartment with his wife and his kids, and we all sit around and watch the UFC. He's got a gated, like, apartment community, so you have to go up to the gatekeeper there to let you in. And I was with my friend Rocky, and we go up to the gate, and I say, oh, you know the address, Valiant and Ruby, whatever. And he says, oh, and who are you? And I just look at him and I go, Dr. Fass and guest. And I just turn and I turn to Rocky and I just look at her, and I just gave her like the $1 million look, and she was like biting her tongue not to laugh. It was quite fantastic.
Oh my god,
it was hysterical.
I hope you did it with the coldest of blue steel look in your jaw and face.
I really did. She's like, how long were you waiting for that? Like when we drove off, she starts cracking up. I was like, yeah, I had that brewing for a minute there. Such an ass.
Have you had a doctor moment yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I haven't.
I actually got to see the Barry Hard Knock fight last night.
The what to the who the what now?
Barry Hard Knock fight.
Oh,
oh my god, UFC 104.
Yeah, Barry Hard Knock.
I heard people that don't watch this, I guess.
I heard like berries and hard donks.
You know, I'm Southern and I have my retainers in, so they're okay.
Yeah, that was a good fight.
Whatever. You know, I just thought you'd be happy because you get to talk about UFC with someone that actually saw.
Yeah. That was the prelim on Spike, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those were pretty good fights, actually. The prelims. Yeah. The UFC, mixed. It was mixed. The championship fight was the most outrageously poor call I think that I've ever seen in the UFC.
I didn't get to see that one. Wasn't there controversy about his size?
I heard someone would be like,
dude, he was like 40 pounds heavier.
No, that was... it wasn't John Bones Jones. It was one of the first fights. He came in 6 pounds over. I don't know if he was able... Normally what they do is you come in the weigh-in, and if you're over, they give you an hour to make that weight. I don't know if he came in over but then was allowed but was able to cut after the fact, or sometimes what they'll do is they'll say to the opponent, is this okay? So if the opponent says that's fine, then they fight. But they change the rules a lot too. Like sometimes they'll say no if you come over when you're not allowed to fight, and then other times they give the option to the fighter. I think it has to do with the pre-fight contracts and what's actually specified in the contract. And what's agreeable to both parties. But yeah, he came in over, but he absolutely devastated that fighter. So it was like, it was over in like the first round. It was devastating. That was a good fight.
Can I tell you guys a really weird story?
Yeah,
sure.
It's good though. Okay, so there's multiple parts to this. It's very complicated, and I'm just kind of realizing what happened now. But on Monday night, I went to go see Paramore and at the House of Blues, and fantastic concert. And actually, the guys that opened for them, I even enjoyed more, which was Paper Route. Which, if you like music that I say that I like on this show, you will love them. And you can pick up their CD on iTunes for like $9. They are kind of electric, kind of alternative rock. It's very good. But anyways, I got into the weird situation of, as we were watching the opening band, I was like, wow, this music's awesome. Like, it's almost like nothing I've really heard before, and it seems to be appealing to me. So for some reason, I was so excited that I went on my iPhone, and for the first time ever, I like purchased the CD like off my iPhone. Like, I started downloading it so I could listen to it on the way home after the concert. So that happened. Then last night, I had some Captain Crunch Crunchberries.
Oh.
And like I got like that sugar coma where I just passed out and I didn't wake up.
At all.
Well, until this morning. This is like 10:30 or whatever at night. And so I had a dream last night that I was playing in like a 5-on-5 basketball game against the guys against Paper Route, and like when I was going up for a layup or something, the drummer from the band knocked me on my ass, like knocked me like down and started punching the shit out of me, and just started beating the crap out of me. And
that's horrible.
And I'm like, what's going on, man? And then like it somehow transitions to this courtyard where he's now at a bench. I'm like, dude, I bought your CD. Like, I didn't pirate it or anything. Like, it's not something... I didn't do something wrong. Look at it. I bought your CD. I just, you know, the other CD that you had, I downloaded it, but then I bought it after that because I liked it. I thought it was good. Bought it off Amazon for $3.
God, that was a fail. Lee, it was Anthony Johnson.
That's nuts, though, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Anthony Johnson against Yoshida. And Yoshida, it was 41 seconds. That was a beatdown. That was devastating. It was an absolute devastating beatdown. That was a good fight. The Joe Stevenson fight over Spencer Fisher was pretty good. Stevenson just manhandled him. The T-Bow Near fight was when Joe Rogan called the audience a bunch of L.A. douchebags because they were booing it.
Whoops.
Yeah, that was actually hysterical.
Well, Joe Rogan's a New Yorker, so that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, it was amazing. It's like we were all sitting there, and I was text messaging with Mike Robertson, and I think he was at a bar or something because he couldn't hear the audio. And I was like, dude, did you hear that? And he's like, no, what happened? I was like, Joe Rogan just called the audience a bunch of L.A. douchebags.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
But anyways, I saw Transformers 2. Have you guys seen this?
I'm so sorry to hear that.
I haven't seen the second one, seen the first one.
I didn't think it was that bad. It had everything I wanted from just like a movie that I wanted to watch at night after work. Like it had just lots of action. It had the robots. It had, I still have a severe dislike for Megan Fox. I do not like her whatsoever.
Wow.
I just think she is kind of a bitch and, she's not really good looking.
Wow.
And I think John would agree with me that Sloane from...
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... That, of course. But, again, that's like saying, you know, do you like mint chocolate chip ice cream or chocolate chip ice cream? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I may have a preference, but no, I'll damn well enjoy both of them.
No, it's not like that.
It is.
But I think that Shia LaBeouf was...
hotter than Megan Fox?
No, he's pretty good. He's doing a good job. And you know what? He's handsome. And
he's a handsome man.
It was interesting because
I good jackets.
Well, do you remember the story how he got like in a drunk driving accident and he messed up his hand during the shooting of the movie?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was interesting how they covered that up or like how they rationalized him to be wearing a cast for half of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, somehow Megan Fox just had the materials to put a cast on his arm.
No.
In the middle of a desert.
Was it a cast? That was
yeah,
just
if you look at it, it's a cast. It's a cast really? That's covering three of his fingers.
I thought it was just, like, schmata they wrapped around.
No, it's not just stuff they found in Europe, or wherever they were.
Europe!
Egypt. Spoiler.
Same difference.
You know when they that movie ruined it? And look, to the audience, if you haven't watch the movie, that's your bad for not seeing a movie.
I haven't seen
like
the movie. You're
going to
ruin it for me right now.
Don't ruin it for me.
You know, this is another Punch-Out thing, John.
It's not another Punch-Out thing because...
Don't do it, John.
All right.
I'll drop you.
Fine. But let's just say there's a certain point in the movie that they decided to use a top secret thing and it was like very convoluted. That was the point that lost me for good.
That thing on the thing?
Yeah, exactly.
In the middle of something?
Exactly.
Oh, dude, that thing was awesome. I hope we get those.
Yeah, you're a liar.
But it's something that I've seen in other, like, space movies before.
Yeah, maybe, but it was just like, how did, you know, it was like, there was, it just, it was way too far-fetched. I just couldn't tolerate it.
You don't think the government's working on top secret stuff right now?
I'm sure they are, but
they
I don't
have top
think
men
you,
on that project, dude.
I'm sure they are, but I don't think you could call them with a cell phone and tell them to use it.
Dude, just warm it up.
Telling you.
I think so. I think we got some pretty cool stuff. Like, that's why I always wanted to work for like the CIA, get access to
the
all that cool stuff,
and not be able to tell anyone. You know, it that was the thing. Like, it just
fringe division.
I went into that movie knowing that it was supposedly was awful, knowing that I was going to be disappointed. And usually when I do that, I'll enjoy the movie because I have no expectations. And I still hated it.
Well, you know what I'm watching tonight is 12 Rounds with John Cena on Blu-ray. I've set up to write my programs while watching that.
Wow.
So
Did you watch, what do you call it? First of all, I'm getting real excited to watch V.
V for Vendetta?
V for
the
Visit.
TV show?
Yeah.
Okay, see, first off, we have to talk about Flash Forward.
Listen, youngster, I remember that show when it first came on, so I'm very excited about the remake.
Okay, Dad, but for Flash Forward, the biggest problem I still have with that show is I love John Cho. I love him. He's a really great
actor. Awesome. Yeah, he's awesome.
But the friggin' main character who just has that look on his face the whole show, like that pissed off, someone crapped in my cornflakes this morning. Like, what is anyone else seeing this? And if they are, please email the show with your comments on Flash Forward.
Which guy?
The main character.
The main character.
With the facial hair from Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, him. Okay.
He always has this look.
He kind of looks like that in general.
No, it's just like, dude, he just looks like he's like flaring his nostrils, and he's like,
"Yeah, oh, Kevin
farted, man." Yeah.
Kevin left the whole thing on my Facebook about
that. Like, did the world stop and everyone farted?
I had to give it to him. When Kevin's on, he nails it. It was really funny.
No, John, if you look at pictures of that guy from Flash Forward anywhere on the internet, it's all the same thing.
It's like Joseph Fernandes.
Yeah, Joseph something. Yeah.
Give up trying to say people's names today.
Good call.
Thanks. Continue, Kevin.
No, I think that's about it. But
it was a good episode, though. It was a good episode. I'm just a little concerned that they not get too far off track with things. Like, they're introducing stuff that's out of nowhere, and you're like, whoa, okay. But so, you know what I mean? Like, that bothers me when shows try to get too creative with their plot lines, and all of a sudden someone gets brought in, and you're like, where the hell did this come from?
Dude,
so,
but the best part is that the guy – what's his name from Lost? Not Charlie, but the
Charlie.
No, not Charlie. I'm not talking about someone that's on Flash Forward, but the what's his name? The English guy who was in the hatch.
He's not English. He's
Scottish or whatever.
Ah, you tard.
Like Charlie. Penny, and Charlie and Penny are both on the show.
Yeah, they are.
Flash Forward.
They got a bunch of
all the people that got killed off and lost. Mm-hmm. Ooh. It might have been a spoiler if you haven't watched the last six seasons of Lost. Well, we're not an entertainment show. It's your fault. You guys got to...
Yeah, because we're sure as hell not entertaining right now.
Hey, do you guys have anything else?
No. I mean, you know, while you guys were watching up-to-date TV shows, I watched White Men Can't Jump last night.
Men Can't Jump? That's a good show. A good movie, sorry.
Yeah. That was my contribution.
Kevin, did you watch Dollhouse?
I haven't started watching it yet. Unfortunately, my time has been spent catching up on Parks and Recreation, which is still...
Which Fridays. I finally saw an episode of. I saw the beauty pageant episode, and it was...
Oh, my God.
No. It was hilarious.
Tell me, Aziz, like, the Indian guy on the show.
Yeah.
He's like,
he nails it every time.
All right, let me guess. B, C, A. How'd you get in here? Get the hell out of here. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you can stay through. Yeah, it was... I enjoyed it very much.
It's so much better than The Office, although The Office was fantastic this past week.
That's a very heavy statement, Kevin.
No, it's Lee, I speak the truth. I'm a man of truth.
Wow. You think Parks and Recreation as a whole is better than The Office?
Than the current, against the latest episodes.
Okay, well, since I haven't seen the current, I can't, because I'm always like 3 years behind.
The only good episode this year has been the wedding episode, and this past week where it's just...
Oh, and they did the dance, right? They did that damn YouTube dance.
Yeah.
I really wanted to see that.
I have never seen that video. I totally missed that.
Have you still not seen it?
I still have not seen it.
Oh my, it's pretty funny. I mean, it's totally something like rich white people would do to be funny, but it's funny.
Yeah. And Smallville is on its ninth season, so been watching.
I heard it's getting real ridiculous.
It's getting interesting, you know. I still like the woman who plays Lois.
It's
She's
still
like,
on.
I know, that's what most people say. It's still
on. I can't believe that's still on.
9 years of what's his name?
I mean,
name?
Good for them. I just can't believe it's still on.
Well, the guy's playing Clark Kent is now like a producer on the show. Like it's been going on that long that they had to make him a producer, and he's 32 years old. A guy who was playing 2 years ago was playing a guy in college is now 32 years old.
Awesome.
So.
The magic of Hollywood.
Yeah. All right, that's it. That was a good entertainment segment, guys. All right, we're going to go record the show.